Hello, this is Vivi on 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble with English Talk Radio. My guest today is Jeremy Stubbs, President of the British Conservatives in Paris, and our subject is, what now, after the Brexit agreement is signed? Hello, Jeremy, welcome back to English Talk Radio.
Hello, thank you. Very good to be here.
We have a new Prime Minister. We have everything in order to leave the European Union. Any last-minute hitches?
Nope, it's all going to go according to plan, in as far as there was a plan. And we'll be leaving at 2300 hours, as Captain Mannering would say, on Friday evening.
I'm not hearing you terribly well. Can you turn that up a little bit?
Yes. I was just saying that we'll be leaving at 11 p.m. on Friday evening.
Yes.
Exactly according to plan.
This has been a long process, Jeremy.
It has indeed, and many people didn't thought it would ever end. So this, I think, is a good thing. This at least is some kind of certainty, and we should be grateful for that.
I think many of us are waiting to sigh on Friday, but we are afraid to. No Big Ben bongs, alas, but great rejoicing in the streets, do you think?
Well, some people will be rejoicing, that's for sure, and others will not be. We know that Nigel Farage will be holding a big street party with his friends and supporters, so there will certainly be some mirth in the streets of London.
I thought that had been disallowed. I thought they said, no, Nigel.
Well, I'm sure that something will be going on. You know, you won't be able to keep people off the streets generally. And I imagine he and his chums will be doing something, probably in front of the cameras. So, you know, if you're looking for scenes, if people want footage of people celebrating in the streets, they will be able to find it. Of course, there will be other people who will be shut away indoors in a depressed mood. But as I said, overall, we should look beyond all of this and just be glad that we have some kind of certainty. Something is going to happen.
Well, of course, there'll be people crying into their cocoa, and that's all already been expected. But at the same time, I mean, isn't it time to leave the cocoa behind and run into the streets and dance?
Well, the main thing is that we should move forward with a positive attitude, because even though we leave on Friday, this is only on paper. Nothing will change that much immediately. And we've got to hope that a good new deal is struck for the relationships by the end of the year. And that means a lot of work. So, as you say, there's no time for crying into cocoa. There's a lot of work to be done. And if we want it to succeed, we must put in the effort and view it positively.
UK passport holders living in the EU, our passports are the wrong colour, Jeremy.
Well, the new colour will be phased in. So I don't think that's much of a problem. But of course, many people are looking for a new passport in as far as they're looking for a new citizenship.
Yeah.
People in France, people in Germany are looking for French and German citizenship and so on.
So at this point, I'm perfectly capable after Friday, say Saturday morning, I can take a little trip on my EU passport as I'm a British subject, and nobody will raise an eyebrow.
Well, I can't say for their eyebrows, but legally speaking, they won't do anything. And what we want to know is, what is it going to be like in 2021? Right. What will the situation be like then? And for the moment, we really don't quite know.
€100 or €120 to change that colour?
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone who really cares about the colour of the passport?
Well, no, it's the validity, isn't it? We don't want to all get stopped. There are enough people going to be stopped at airports because of other things. We don't want to get stopped. I think it's this straight ahead thing. Everyone has to understand that nothing is going to happen for the next year.
Well, indeed, that's right. But of course, when we say nothing is going to happen, Nothing is going to happen necessarily in daily life, but everything is happening mm-hmm. on the level of negotiations. Mm-hmm. And that is where public opinion will still be very important.
You are listening to 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble. You say public opinion will be important, but there's nothing to vote on. You're talking about vocal stuff, people complaining and getting angry and getting upset or rejoicing or whatever, because we're not going to know very much about these negotiations until they're done.
You're absolutely right. We're not going to know very much. Why not? Because the government doesn't want public opinion to be too influential at this stage. That is precisely it. I mean, everything until now has been strongly influenced by public opinion. Mm. And public opinion has been very, very polarized. And we need to get beyond that polarization. And as far as I can see, the main tactic that government has found is not to give people enough information for them to get het up about it.
Little knowledge is a dangerous thing, as you say.
Very well said, Vivi. Very well said.
Where are we now? We have progressed. Next stop. Is there a next stop for the average man in the room?
Sorry, Vivi, didn't hear you there.
Is there a next stop for the average man in the street, average woman in the street? We're going to do nothing, absolutely nothing, while these negotiations are going on. But we have progressed. What is the next stop?
Well, for the average person in the street, I imagine they will be vigilant about every piece of news coming out of the negotiations, because public opinion is still fairly polarized. There are those who want the UK to remain very close to the European Union. And there are those who really want to cut off connections in a very, very radical way. And I think that the latter view, the radical departure view, is one that the government will find quite difficult to put into practice, especially as we've only got a few months in which to do the negotiations. Negotiations don't start until March, and they've got to be over in time so that whatever deal is found, it can be voted upon in the European Parliament.
So you're saying after the summer holidays, I mean, we're talking now September, October, November. I mean, that's pretty short notice.
It's very short notice. And if you're going to do a quick deal, then it's probably not the kind of deal that would bring radical changes. I mean, we've had mixed signals from the government. The Chancellor himself, Sajid Javid, said, first of all, don't bank on remaining close to the European Union. And only a few days later, he gave the opposite opinion. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a sort of cunning plot to give us two different points of view, or whether the government itself is wavering on this. But it's for sure that some sort of compromise is going to have to be found. And my guess is that the compromise is not going to please the more extreme opinions on the continuum.
Which is a very sensible idea, to keep it all quiet until the last minute. However, we've seen that that causes friction and troubles, and that may rebound. So that's not necessarily the right way to go. The EU itself seems relieved as well that we have got to this point.
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. What we all lived through last year is something that no one wants to repeat. Mm. Plus, it's true that in the European Union, and I think in the UK, a lot of people know what we would lose if we made a radical break in relations. I mean, we've got to keep close on issues of intelligence. We've got to keep some sort of military cooperation, especially between the UK and France. That cooperation is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So, We can't, you know, people understand that we're now fighting to find a compromise. don't doubt there will be a lot of fighting talk in public. People will be, you know, on both sides will be making strong statements about how they won't compromise and how they won't give in and all the rest of it. But they, in fact, they will make a compromise. One of the sticking points, though, at the moment people are talking about is fish. And certain points like fishing rights will be considered very symbolic on both sides of the channel. Not that there's much fish left in the channel itself.
You took my joke away from me.
Sorry about that. But yes, I mean, something like fish will be very symbolic.
No.
And there might even be more fighting about fish alone than about the whole of the rest. Who knows? Mm. So some of the problems ahead will make that compromise rather difficult, if only from the point of view of perception.
Mm. Well, that's come up already. I mean, President Macron has made his views very, very clear about fish. The fishy head has already risen. And same with Prime Minister Johnson. He's not saying too much right now, but he's very, very determined. Speaking of Prime Minister Johnson, he seems to be working hard, flashing around the place, getting things done. Will this type of behavior last?
Well, I think so. I mean, he's into his stride in an unexpected and remarkable way. Well, if you think of his record as foreign secretary, which was the highest national government post he had held, was not considered to be, shall we say, an uncheckered success.
Exactly.
So by comparison, his record as prime minister has been really very different. Mm-hmm. I am a member of the Conservative Party, but nevertheless, impressive, impressive.
I think so.
So I think there is cause for optimism when the person in charge seems to know what they are doing. And I think it's also fair to say that although in France, Mr. Johnson is portrayed as a kind of extreme populist, in the Conservative Party, he's always been considered pretty much a moderate on general political issues. And we can expect that moderation, I think, to continue.
Speaking of the Conservative Party, what is the mood right now?
Buoyant.
Good.
And, you know, if you compare the mood now with the mood, say, 6 months ago, it is a radical change. Mm. A radical change. Of course, the danger would be to get too buoyant and get carried away with excessive optimism. But I think people realize that expectations are high. When you win previously Labour constituencies in the north of England, you know that you're going to have to do an awful lot to hold on to those constituencies in future. So, you know, I think there is a constructive mood in the party.
Punitive damage. Will the EU be able to financially reproach the UK any further?
I think they will want some financial sort of wins here or there so that they can say, oh, look, we didn't give away everything. I don't think they're going to make that much of a dent on the City of London. They still need the City of London. Hmm. They might take away a few things here and there for show. I think the main point for the EU will be about things like labor law and environment law. They don't like the idea of the UK undercutting the European Union by having lower standards. Now, it's not necessarily clear to me that the UK wants to have low standards in employment law or in the environment. We've set more ambitious environmental objectives than many EU countries. Mm. So this may be talk, but it's certainly the thing to watch from the EU.
So, all joy and sunny uplands, or do we have drama just around the corner?
There's always drama around the corner. There's always drama, and it's certainly true that we are now we're in a waiting game until the talks actually begin in March. And as I've said, a lot of people here, a lot of British citizens in Europe, will be waiting to see what happens to them. And this is something that will be quite dramatic. I mean, I don't think in Britain, my impression, I don't know about you, is that most people living in Britain are not really very concerned about the plight of people, of British citizens in Europe. On the other hand, they do see every day the situation of European citizens living in Britain. Mm-hmm. And how this whole question will impact on public opinion, I just don't know yet. But of course, the main thing is we don't want to be forgotten.
Well, there is the concern. I brought this up, I think, the last time we spoke about people who live in the UK who absolutely say, well, you know, you decided to live in France, so tough luck on you. You know, jolly bad luck on the French. It's the way it is for you. And we don't particularly want to help you. And we don't particularly want to give anything of ours away just to help you, to make you feel better. I spoke this morning to somebody who's just applied for French citizenship, a UK citizen.
Yes.
What would you say to him?
Well, we know that many of our colleagues are taking out local citizenship precisely because they're afraid about what will happen. Mm. And I think overall, even though there is a rush on at the moment and the queue is apparently quite long, I think it is a sensible move to make if you can, although it's true that there have been some cases of people who've been refused.
Many, many. That's the concern.
Indeed. There has also been a lot of talk about a scheme whereby the European Union would grant a kind of associate citizenship to all British citizens. This sounds to me, I mean, it sounds like a nice idea, but it seems pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is that whatever is granted to EU citizens in the UK should be granted to UK citizens in Europe. I mean, that is the principle we must stick to.
Well, and I don't think that's an issue in doubt. I think that will happen eventually. But I think right now to be taking out citizenship for another country seems like a panic mechanism, because as you just said, so many have been refused, and once you've been refused, that's it, baby.
Yep, but you never know until you try. What else can you do?
Well, but you can do what a lot of people do, Jeremy, and that's nothing. Wait and see.
Well, the thing is that if you're living in Germany, you would have to renounce your British citizenship to get German citizenship.
Yep.
So it's even tougher there, I would imagine.
Yeah. Noting a spate of books, spate may be a small word for the avalanche, some revisionist about what could have been. What could have been? When you see it as it is now, today, what could have been?
Well, there's a lot of nostalgia for the time before David Cameron launched that referendum.
Mm.
I think, though, the extent of the feeling that Brexit has revealed shows us that there was already a deep problem. It wasn't so much Cameron who created it. The problem was there. The question is whether he chose the best solution. And it's quite possible that he did not choose the best solution. There are some who say as well that the European Union itself made a mistake by rushing too quickly towards greater unification in the 2000s. And that this is a movement that has now been slowed down across Europe. And some would say for the better. For the better, so that Brexit is part of a wider slowing down of the European project. I don't know if this is going to be true, but as you say, when you look back at what could have been, there are certainly many other things that could have happened, but that general slowing down and a kind of a punch up between the UK and the EU of some kind, they were inevitable. One thing that in my mind sticks out is if Cameron had got a better deal when he was doing his renegotiating at the start of 2016, maybe that could have been the solution. But of course, we'll never know.
Well, I think that's a very good point, because 2016 seems like such a long, long time ago. But yes, yeah. He was buckled in at that point. I mean, he wasn't a free agent, was he?
Well, no, I think the fact is that UKIP were making serious progress at that time. Mm. And that showed that there was something abroad in the country. And that is, of course, what prompted him to what I think was a gamble on a renegotiation and a straight in-out referendum. And, of course, he lost. And in terms of public opinion and posterity, he has paid the price. You talk of books. I understand his own volume is half price in Waterstone, somebody told me. But, that's posterity for you.
Well, it's the you can't give it away idea. Sir Nick Clegg has the same problem. They're gone. They did certain things at certain times, whether they were good or bad. They're not the people to tell us that. It's the historians that will tell us that, but they won't tell us that for 25 years. So
that's true. That's very true.
I mean, some of it is just life, and some of it is, I don't think you can point a finger at a particular time and say, all right, you, Cameron, or you, Clegg, did this particular thing, and that's what caused this upheaval. I think it was a process. I think it was a process of sliding. And I also think the EU was very, very punitive itself at that point.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It was a slow-growing process. You can see it beginning in the 2000s with those various referenda over the Treaty for a Constitution. And I think for a lot of this time, a lot of people just didn't see what was coming. Mm. They didn't see what was coming, and they were taken by surprise.
Blinded by the light. We have only just begun the year of 2020. Happy New Year to you. I would like to see the word Brexit retired by the end of 2020. It has become synonymous with all things difficult and dull.
Yes, well, that's the Prime Minister's attitude, and I think it's true that we're all sick to death of this word Brexit. You spoke of a spate of books or a flood of books. There was a time when Brexit in the title of a book could sell it. I would suggest that henceforward, Brexit in the title of a book will not sell it. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole word was so divisive. The Prime Minister talked of healing the divisions, rather New Age talk in a way, but and certainly very hopeful. But yes, we've seen that controlling the flow of information and trying to influence the use of terms is one of the instruments of politics.
Mm. Well, yes, but you also have other things as well, and certainly other theories, which we'll leave to another time when we see how things evolve. What do you see for the future of the UK once disengaged from the European Union, Jeremy?
Well, there is a vision of the UK as part of the what is sometimes referred to as the Anglosphere. That is to say, strengthening ties with North America, Australia, New Zealand. Now, although that has some very attractive possibilities there, and of course, I think we should strengthen those ties, it is illusory, I think, to imagine that somehow we could replace the whole of our market connections with the EU with market connections with these other countries. It just doesn't work. We've got to be somewhere in the middle. We always have been a little bit in the middle, but now we're going to be even more in the middle.
Well, I also think we're on site. We're right here. We're not close to Australia, and we're certainly not close to the US. For certain things we are. But, you know, you want shoes, you want bacon, you want butter, you want books. We're in the right place.
Well, indeed. And I think that we have to get a positive vision of ourselves in this place as intermediaries. We're half and half, I would say. That's not going to please. There are a lot of people who want us to be either entirely on one side or entirely on the other. They're just going to have to get used to this new position.
Well, and I do think that's something that the government has to work on as far as their, how can I put this, their connection with the voters. And they have to say, look, this is how it is. This is what you voted for. This is what you've got. And this is where we go from. We go forward from here. This isn't it. This is where we go forward from. And I think that platform will be encouraging rather than, you know, we don't want any more dreary stuff.
Well, absolutely. And I think also that the government, one of its big aims is to refocus attention on domestic politics and domestic issues. This is a great part of the plan because, of course, during virtually the whole of Theresa May's mandate, all attention, all energies were directed towards the Brexit question. And domestic politics was neglected. Although it has to be said, we were prudently managing the nation's finances, which means we're in a bit of a better position to spend now. So I can imagine that Boris Johnson will make a great, great play of spending on the health service, of spending on infrastructure, and will make hay, as it were, whilst these questions are in the limelight. Because whilst that is the case, the negotiations with the European Union can go on behind those rather closed doors.
On that note, thanks to Jeremy Stubbs, President of the British Conservatives in Paris, for being a guest on English Talk Radio.
I know how. Thank you very much, Vivi.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Listen to English Talk Radio Wednesday 1900, Sunday 12:30, and don't forget the podcast, www.campusgrenoble.org. Thanks, Louis. English Talk Radio.